Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we'll finish out today's show and finish out our week with a call-in for International Transgender Visibility Day. That's today. So to celebrate, we are hosting a call-in for our trans listeners right now. Lately, when we've covered the issue, we've gotten so many wonderful calls from people in this community, so we're looking forward to hearing from some of you today. Here's the conversation we thought we might have now, celebrating Trans Visibility Day. What does visibility mean to you? And is visibility desirable to you? Trans listeners, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. The day is meant to celebrate trans and non-binary folks and to raise awareness about the discrimination the community faces, clearly. Yet often, it is visibility that leads to such discrimination, right? During a time when the trans community is particularly vilified, is visibility something you're interested in as a trans person? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Now, we're not implying that trans people should want to hide your transness to avoid persecution, more that it's possible that members of the community could feel this way, in some cases as individuals, like experiencing gender dysphoria, which is another reason why many might not be interested in visibility. Common amongst trans people, especially those who fit the gender binary, gender dysphoria is described in the DSM-5 as psychological distress that results from an incongruence between one's sex assigned at birth and one's gender identity. Pretty straightforward. Is gender dysphoria something that you experience? If so, does it affect your feelings about this holiday, International Transgender Visibility Day? How much of your dysphoria comes from the societal response to those who don't fit in the binary versus how you actually feel about your own gender expression? Our lines are open, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We note that the American Psychiatric Association says, quote, though gender dysphoria often begins in childhood, some people may not experience it until after puberty or much later. So tell us a little bit of your story. When did you become aware of your transness, and what are common myths and misconceptions about transgender life that you would like to break? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And if you don't want to talk about visibility or your interest in or ambivalence about visibility, we could just hear some stories. When did you become aware of your transness? Maybe that's the point of Visibility Day, just letting some stories get out there of individuals in your lives and letting everybody else hear your stories to help them accept you as just another person on the earth like them. So tell us a little bit of your story. When did you become aware of your transness? And maybe you want to share your thoughts on some common myths and misconceptions about transgender life that you'd like to break. What's a big one that you wanted to blow open with a few sentences? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Just give us a little bit of your personal history, a little oral history for the ages of when and how you became aware of your transness. Another question for you: do you think trans visibility and gay pride should be treated similarly in the way they are sometimes? While we lump the trans community in with gays, lesbians, and bisexuals, you know, LGBTQ, right? Gender and sexuality are not the same thing. I don't have to tell you. Gender is about who you are and is expressed outwardly, what gender, where on the gender spectrum you experience yourself to be, whereas sexuality is about who you're attracted to. That's straightforward and isn't necessarily something that can be judged by others as easily upon first glance. So what do you make of this distinction? What do you make of sharing an umbrella with the rest of the LGBTQ community? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. It's a call-in on this Transgender Visibility Day, International Transgender Visibility Day. Tell us a little bit about how you became of your own gender identity and what myths you would like to break, and how do you feel about visibility, if you want to get into that as well. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Happy International Transgender Visibility Day, and we'll take your calls right after this. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now to your International Transgender Visibility Day calls on how you became aware of your gender identity, any myths you want to break for others out there about trans life, or your thoughts about visibility per se. Ceci in Ridgewood, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ceci.
Hi, Brian. It's good to be talking with you again. I was interviewed by you, I think maybe a little over a year ago, when we were talking about fentanyl and cocaine.
Uh-huh. Right. Oh, yeah, I remember that now that you say it. So what do you want to say today? Oops, did we lose Ceci? Let me get Ceci back on there. Sorry, I think that was our fault on our end. You're on.
Okay, no worries. So something I wanted to share is something that I've actually written about that I've written on Vice in an article. I've written for the Brooklyn Rail about this. And it's the question of passing, which means, you know, the ability of a trans person to be perceived by others as cisgender. Mm-hmm. Cisgender in terms of the gender that we identify with.
Right.
And, you know, being able to pass, you know, for me, in my case, as a cis woman, can both lend itself, you know, safety and protection, because, you know, you aren't a visible target. But then on the other side of it, and something that I frequently experience, you know, on the streets of New York, men, you know, perceiving me as a cis woman and, you know, catcalling me, you know, making advances, and then whether, you know, I speak up and they hear my voice or who knows, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, they suddenly realize I'm trans, and then they become embarrassed, you know, because of the stigma around, you know, just being attracted to trans women, mm-hmm. You know, like the shame, and then, you know, what other people might think, or, you know, all the different repressed feelings that they might have. It can, and I've had this happen multiple times where it incites violence, you know, and these men, you know, get angry and lash out at us.
So this story, it sounds to me like, is a lesson in visibility is not so much a choice. It's going to be imposed on you, at least in your case.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, a lot of times, you know, I don't really have much say in the matter, you know, and a lot of something, and I was just talking about this yesterday with a trans friend of mine. You know, we a lot of times feel like cis people, like if we get misgendered, you know, or, you know, someone is treating us not how we ought to be treated, we feel like we've done something wrong, like we're not, you mm-hmm. know, being feminine enough, you mm-hmm. know, or we're not mm-hmm. doing enough to prove our, you know, yeah. womanhood.
So it comes with that baggage too. Ceci, I'm going to leave it there so I can get some other folks on in our time. Thank you so much for calling in again. Keep calling us. Andy in Elmont, you're on WNYC. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me. I wanted to respond to the question you had about some of the misconceptions, and that kind of tied into how I came out and recognized that, you know, I am trans. Mm-hmm. I identify as a trans man. Before I came out that second time, I had come out as being gay or, you know, a lesbian at the time. And I always felt that there was this spectrum of, you know, feminine to masculine, and that trans was kind of like the farthest point. Right, you were a lesbian, and then maybe you were a butch lesbian, and then you were a trans man. And once I started, you know, understanding that there, you know, gender is outside of just that feminine to masculine spectrum, mm-hmm. and realize that I am pretty feminine. I don't have to be the butchest in the room, but I do still identify as a man. And that was really key to my coming out. And I think that's still a misconception that's out there.
Does it take a lot of repeated explaining to different people you come in contact with?
I think it does. I'm very lucky that I don't have to come out so much anymore. I'm able to live a stealth. But I know when I first came out to, you know, family and friends, they would say things like, well, you know, but you like chick flicks. And I'm like, yeah, but guys can like chick flicks and can like feminine things as well. So that's definitely something I still encounter.
Andy, thank you so much. Call us again. Brant in Bay Ridge, you're on WNYC. Hi, Brant.
Hey, Brian. I just wanted to partially dispel the myth that men crying is purely about societal pressures. I think there's always a little bit of column A and column B, but it's difficult to try testosterone. You can't just try it on for size. But if you did, you'd find that it's just more difficult for people with a lot of testosterone in their bodies to cry physically. So I've been on testosterone for years and years, more than 10 years, and I am still sad about things to the same degree I was before I started taking testosterone. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't manifest itself physically through crying. And I found that people who I've talked to about this are either totally shocked because you don't normally get the experience of having one experience and getting the other and seeing the difference there.
Right.
But I used to cry very easily at the end of movies. I don't cry very easily at all. I've maybe cried a couple times in the last more than handful of years, just because it just doesn't happen as easily anymore. So it's not that men are just being pinned down by society to not cry. It's just not as easy for them physically.
Interesting. Do you think that you experience sadness differently since you've been on testosterone? Or is the experience of the emotion the same, just not the physical outlet of crying?
I think that's definitely part of it, that the physical... the physical response is different. I'm a little bit more quick to anger than I was before. But emotionally, very, very similar, though I would say I am a little bit more extreme emotional reactions are very rare for me.
Brant,
yeah.
We could leave it there, I guess. Thank you so much. Call us again. Red in Yonkers, you're on WNYC. Hi, Red.
Hi, Brian. It's so great to talk to you.
Glad you
Thanks
called in.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about what it means to be visible, especially as a trans non-binary man in theater making spaces. I'm a theater maker and an artist, and so my transness comes like first, like, while, you know, not everyone's identity is like, you know, the only thing about me is not that I'm trans. Like, obviously I have a multitude of things about me that make me who I am,
mm-hmm.
but being visible in my artistry and like being unapologetically trans and like whether I pass or not, in certain contexts is incredibly important to me. And like, also on that note, thinking about like outside of the venue of theater, like then passing becomes a question of safety and like where I work, you know, to pay my bills, like how I pass is received so differently than when I'm in artistic spaces, and like the recognition of that as well as the respect of that varies so greatly. And it also has a very different effect on how I move through that world. Like if I'm being clocked as a cis man, I like the code switching I do on mm-hmm. the job of, you know, I don't know, like if I'm at the register and someone is like, oh, hey bro, how's it going, mm-hmm. man? And then all of a sudden I'm like, okay, I'm all right. Yeah, bro. Like, what do you want? And, whereas in other spaces, it can feel at times like I there's the knowledge that masculinity lives within me, and that is like how I inhabit this space and this body. And but it's not the performance of some sort of toxic masculinity or right. a performance of femininity. And so like the question of like, then the question of passing becomes about safety. But I think like in the spaces where I feel most seen, it's just about like those out parts of myself existing in a vast expanse and fluidity that other people can take and go.
Yeah, really, really well said. We just have 15 seconds left. Do you experience mm-hmm. this code switching as a power you have or something that is imposed on you by other people's expectations?
I would think it's both, because like it's a skill that you have to develop in order to keep yourself safe. And I think anytime it's a skill you're developing out of safety, it is certainly something that is placed upon you due to oppressive structures. Because if I didn't have to code switch, I wouldn't.
Red, thank you. Thank you. And thank you for all your calls, listeners, on this International Transgender Visibility Day. And that's the Brian Lehrer Show for today, produced by Mary Croak, Lisa Allison, Amina Cerna, Carl Boisrond, and Esperanza Rosenbaum. We had Juliana Fonda and Matt Morondo at the audio controls. Have a great weekend, everyone.